Here we go. All right, good evening, good afternoon, good morning, and good night, everyone. It's the Fakeologist Show. It is Sunday, December the 21st, 2025. And I do make a point of date stamping these audios because one day someone's going to dig this crap up and say, what were they thinking back in December of 2025 in Toronto? What were they? What kind of people were they? And damn it, they're going to find this. And at least they get a date. You're listening to Peter in the background, laugh at my very weak joke. Peter, hello.
Hello, Fakeologist.
Hello, hello, hello. We're listening to Rush, YYZ, excuse me, live in Rio. Now, as far as I know, Rio de Janeiro is in Brazil. And it's kind of funny because, number one, the crowd for Rush, at least in Toronto when I've gone, is pretty sedate compared to the absolute euphoria you see in this video in Brazil. I just kind of, I find it kind of funny because, why is it funny? Because last Wednesday we had Jim Rizzoli on, who is a very anti-illegal immigrant, and I understand his point of view. But most of them are from Brazil that have settled in Boston. And it just is funny that he's sort of targeting or against a very lively, full of life group of people, which I do think characterizes a lot of the Central American countries, sorry, South American countries, like Brazil. Mm. Now, Pete, you're closer to Brazil than I am.
And Mexico is qualifies, yes, as a lively place.
Yeah, compared to the frozen tundra that we live in here.
Yeah.
It's just a different world. So, again, even though I see his point that he's very, most people are afraid of illegal immigrants because they jump the queue, but I think you can blame your own federal government more than anything in the United States for it, because they facilitated it, or because the states were asking for it personally.
Yeah, and there's something ironic in so far as I'm sure the indigenous people who were here, I assume, before us, probably looked askance at our coming long ago.
Well, they certainly didn't see it coming. Yeah, I got different feelings on the indigenous idea. I mean, there's different ways to look at immigration and the world and who does it belong to anyway, kind of thing.
Exactly.
I'm not sure where you stand on it. I'm not a left winger in any way, but I also know that change is good and inevitable because all systems do fall apart and crumble under their own weight.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that has anything to do with what we're talking tonight, but I just...
Yes, there is immigration involved today. Yeah. And an alternative view of immigration, colonization, the transatlantic slave trade, indirectly or directly, I'll introduce some new possible history for that.
Do you have evidence of what you're speaking?
It's all connected to my readings of different texts and architecture now. So that's the best I can do for evidence. I guess it's textual and, I don't know, circumstantial.
All right. Are we taking phone calls tonight?
Sure, we can take a couple.
Now, just another show note. We did a couple Discords on the weekend today and yesterday. They were kind of lightly attended. We didn't have any Australians on, which means sort of the Bondi story is kind of dead. Although it is somewhat interesting. I think most of us broke it down. You were here last week, Pete, when it was a breaking story, I believe. And
yeah, I was on the show with Lynn Artell.
I think we broke it down as a complete fake hoax. And I don't think there's a lot to discuss about it. It was not one of the better ones. I think they're getting sloppy, bored, tired, lazy. They just slap these things together and pretend and call it a psyop. But what do you think? Any reflections on that?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's due to getting lazy or they just think it's funny to make them so bad that it becomes shocking that people don't notice. Maybe for their amusement, then, I'm saying. You know, picking all those names, the names that I analyzed, and the ridiculous, what was it, little fight where the man named Mustafa disarmed.
Right, yeah. And then they interviewed him in the hospital with the so-called bullet wounds and all that. And he didn't even look wounded. We're going to try and bring Fake Nukes Phil on tomorrow. Instead of Wednesday, because Wednesday we're definitely not doing a show, and not Thursday. So I'm going to see if Phil wants to come on, because he's done quite a few videos on the topics already. So we'll try and get him over here and continue that bakery conversation. Paulie says it's mockery. Yes, it is mockery. Yeah. Or is it? I think they're just lazy, because they don't think anyone cares. Well, we care, but we're not enough people.
Yeah.
Okay. Fake Nukes Phil just confirmed tomorrow, 8 p.m. So there you go.
All right.
All right. Let's get into it. Pete, what do you got?
Let's start with something I've been working on. Hopefully the culmination or the end of all this, this cannibal thread, although I've made a lot of other paragraphs and subchapters elsewhere, but
all right.
I think after today we'll take a little break. In fact, the second half I will read from, well, it won't be the Bible, let us say. So we can exit that.
Okay. And this will be our last show of the year for sure.
Right. Okay.
I think, yeah. Well, I think the next week I won't be around unless there's a psyop.
Yeah, I'll be driving somewhere or recovering from a long drive.
All right. Are you coming back to Canada? You're from Canada, I believe.
No, I'm not driving that far. No, just 8 hours within Mexico.
Wow. I know it's not as big as Canada, but how far can you get in 8 hours in Mexico? Far?
Well, yeah, it's pretty long. Eight from north to south.
Yeah. And the roads are pretty good there, actually.
Yeah, some are quite good.
Well, they have they do have big highways, newer highways, yeah, in some places. Do,
yeah.
And Jeff Berwick, who's in somewhere in Mexico, he keeps pretending he's fighting the power, but they might bring in digital IDs to Mexico faster than here.
Well, let's see. I don't know how.
They don't have the infrastructure, you think?
No, I don't think they do. It may be on the big highways and in the big city, yeah. But.
And it's funny, you're talking about breeding animals. And I was just looking that up today because I think they breed humans.
Yes, well, that's what today's part of the show is probably about.
And I asked the bot, before you get going, you can tell me if it's relevant to the conversation, but I asked the bot because I was wondering... One of the most famous racehorses that I know of was Secretariat. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And I know they still sell its sperm. Then I asked, did they happen back in the day to save the sperm of Secretariat's father and the eggs of his mother? And the bot said, well, cryogenics weren't really that common or advanced in the 70s. Because I think Secretary was born in the 70s. Now it's pretty advanced. And they do harvest eggs out of mares. And obviously they can save the sperm. But then I asked, is it a big thing with human beings today? And it said, yeah, it's way bigger saving and harvesting eggs for humans than it is for horses.
Bigger money.
Yeah, it's about 10 to 15 grand to harvest an egg. And for a human. Mm-hmm. So the question is, of course, is what are they doing with those extra eggs? Because we know they don't. They harvest way more than they could possibly use per person, just in case. Mm-hmm. But I just think that they make people and put them in foster homes, and the British Empire uses them to create humans to lead us, not into temptation or into temptation.
Right? You mean breeding so-called elite political figures.
Yeah, I think so. Music, just any influencer. Now, a politician is a big influencer. Musicians, big entertainers, big influencers. Sports figures, big influencers. What else do humans follow? Is there anything else?
Yeah. Well, no. But then my reading today will deal more with breeding prior to the democratic age. So.
Okay, let's go. I'll be quiet.
Yeah. All right. Toro Tonto and God's human cattle. We are quite comfortable imagining our ancestors breeding farm animals from wild animals. But why would humans stop there? Wouldn't they also breed humans, especially if the farmers were cannibals? All right. Breeding us. And here we leap into the Bible. Noah saved a male and female of every animal species by putting them in his boat or ship. This sounds like the action of a farmer determined to breed animals. How did he choose which males and females to choose? Sorry, how did he know which? Anyway.
You can edit it on the fly. I don't care.
Yeah.
You have
maybe
before.
Later.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but this time it doesn't.
That one is a big one to edit. You put a note, I think, in...
That's my note.
Oh,
all right. Presumably, he chose the most docile ones, which would mean he began animal domestication. The same question applies to God. How did he choose Noah, Noah's wife and children? Noah was not identified as a pious man, so what criteria determined God's choice? Apparently, he wanted the most edible humans, because Noah's sons bear the names of edible things. One Ham, one of the sons, is Ham, obviously, meaning pork meat. Shem's name is the Dutch word for jam. And Japheth's name contains the old word. I think it's one of those Middle Eastern languages that are no longer spoken. The word for a measure of grain, ephah, which is also the phonetic equivalent of wafah. Don't ask me to pronounce that. I guess it's pronounced the same, ephah. Right. It's an Irish name with funny spelling, sometimes spelled A-E-F-A, just as you would expect. From grain, we make bread, and bread is a satanic Christian symbol for human flesh. So all three names are connected to food. All right. After Noah's family survived the flood that presumably cleared the land of competitors, God told Noah's sons, be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth. He sounds like a farmer who wants his herd to grow. He certainly isn't interested in their happiness. While working for Laban, Jacob used magic to breed only spotted goats. Laban's name is a deviation of Alban, whose root means white. Was Jacob working for a white man to breed humans? Wait, And why was he breeding goats, specifically spotted goats? In English, young goats are called kids. So what Jacob was Jacob working to breed humans for Laban? What if spotted meant freckled, a feature common among light-skinned and light-haired humans? Just having fun there, I think. But certainly Alban and breeding goats, which are kids when they're young, it looks like English wordplay or multilingual wordplay. God's obsession with his chosen people, the Jews, and his summary rejection of other breeds or ethnic groups seems very much like a farmer's preference for certain breeds of livestock. Certainly God's criteria for his chosen breed was not an aptitude for intelligence. At least not intelligence as it is defined, as I'd like to define it. Maybe another day I'll reveal the modes of mind and the laws of life. On the contrary, he chose the Jews because they were the juiciest. I mean, because they trusted him, obeyed him, and depended on him for their lives, which is precisely how domestication occurred. Multiply and colonize. Later, as a grandfather, after stating that his God fed him all his life, exactly as if he were a cow or a workhorse, Jacob wished his two grandchildren would multiply in the midst of the earth. Meaning, really, in the earth. Meaning in the underground human prison farms that existed beneath every Tartarian old world city, even beneath Toronto, as I'll try to prove. Though its vast underground shopping complex presently exists under a new world city because the old one was mostly destroyed, reputedly by a fire in 1904 and half a century before that, leaving only buildings such as these, Union Station, the Good Ham Building, the gargoyle-adorned Old City Hall, Osgood Hall. Osgood equals good ox, because O-S, os, equals ox in Dutch. And animal livestock represent human livestock, as they do in the Bible and in the Mithra cult, which I at least associate, I think others associated with cannibalism. Mm-hmm. And two buildings with large rose windows discussed earlier, also in Toronto, St. James Cathedral, known for its beautiful nave window, and the Toronto Necropolis Chapel, known for its large sanctuary rose window. Canada's largest domed stained glass window, often confused with a rose window, is likely in Toronto's St. Michael's Cathedral Basilica. There is St. Michael's. It looks like it has a rose window to me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Toronto's St. Lawrence Market is Toronto's most famous food market. Its cavernous interior resembles a hangar. It has no Catholic features, so one must wonder why it was renamed in honor of a Catholic saint, namely St. Lawrence. To answer that question, one must know a little, I think it's hagiography. St. Lawrence is the patron saint of cooks, bakers, brewers, tanners. I'm highlighting cooks. And reputedly, when Roman Emperor Valerian demanded that the saint surrender the treasures of the church, the saint instead gave Valerian Rome's crippled, blind, and sick people. Well, I'm sure the crippled, blind, and sick were not pleased with this arrangement either. And to be handed over by a man associated with cooking to a Roman emperor at a time when Christians were being fed to lions, well, that's cruel and hints at something very unpleasant. Ironically, St. Lawrence was afterwards roasted alive on a gridiron, presumably, I suppose, by cannibals. So this cannibal theme will not go away. I don't even have to make it up. St. Lawrence's name alludes to the laurel plant also. That plant releases deadly cyanide when crushed. Interesting that a saint associated with cooking is named after a plant that releases a deadly toxin. The animal theme we found in Oxgood Hall also appears in Toronto. I believe this word was made from the Spanish words toro and tonto, which respectively mean bullocks and foolish. Foolish ox, isn't that what the leadership love to have? Lots of foolish oxen.
Well, they say it's an Indian name, an Indian feather. Indian.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I'm aware of all,
yeah, you know, all that.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. And consider my interpretation of Ontario, the province of Toronto. It was constructed from the Spanish word tonta. I just added a T, again, meaning foolish.
Yeah.
And tardio, meaning tardy, as in retarded, which means slow and stupid. Or tari, exactly as in as the last four letters, or almost last four letters of Toronto. Or tarry, which means slowness, at least slowness to leave. And to stay with the Spanish language, Ontario is a province in the country named Canada, a name constructed from the Spanish words acá and nada. Just add an A again. The first letter was missing in for my reading of Ontario, Tontario, and acá nada, which together mean nothing here, which was probably the opinion of the colonizers 500 years ago. Nothing here. Other cities on Lake Ontario also hint at, oh, excuse me, what is this
flush
word?
Related?
My excuse me, there's a hiccup. Words and local fauna. Rochester has raw, meaning fish eggs. Detroit nearly has the old French truite for trout, a local fish. Buffalo is named after local bison or buffalo, and Hamilton, which is nearest Toronto, contains ham.
Making me hungry, all this because food.
That's right. Because after Tartaria's cannibal operation ceased in Toronto, Toronto became a leading processor of pork and was nicknamed Hogtown.
Jeez, yeah, Hogtown. That's because we had large pork processing down.
Yeah,
and it, right. And one it stunk, was, I think.
Surely yeah. did, yeah. Toronto's vast underground shopping area is known as the Path. And so, of course, maybe I should remind readers that I've interpreted certain texts to architecture and underground tunnel systems as places where or as evidence that slaves or humans were being bred and propagated underground by the above ground ruling class. Now, Toronto has this vast underground shopping area. It is known as the Path, which is also the spelling of the Latin word that means disease. It is the largest underground shopping complex in North America, maybe. I just said the world here, covering a lot of space. Imagine a few underground human farms of that scale. I mean, a place that has 1,200 shops. How many humans could you really fit down there across 30 kilometers? And then you can understand that the ruling class fed it, how it fed itself and how it populated Canada with men and women so happy to leave the underground that they were willing to toil at anything in Canada's hostile environment. And after three or four generations of freedom, all memories of the past would be forgotten by the illiterate, and the past would be reinvented by the literate, the writers of history. Consider the story of how the British acquired Toronto. Officially, the British got it by first defeating the native Mississaugas and then persuading them to trade Toronto for some coarse woolen cloth, flannel, blankets, brass kettles, gunpowder, shot guns, tobacco, hose, knives, mirrors, rum, and gun flints. Is that believable? Would one nation conquer another and then offer to trade materials for the land they already conquered? Would the victorious nation give its defeated enemies guns, shot, gunpowder, and gun flints? Why? So that the war could continue? Silly, silly stories. And the deed, the property deed, the land deed, was never filled by either party. Well, who needs a deed? The Mississaugas surrendered. Did the U.S. need a deed when it built its military bases in Japan, Germany, Iraq, and dozens of other countries? Be silly. The world cannibal cult. The meaning of this acronym changes, but it's the same people. Even assigned a food-based name to the native people, the Mississaugas, is a good near anagram for Mrs. Sausage. Sometimes I think I'm going off into a comedy land.
We are
kind of
comedic with the food references.
Yes, I mean, it's post-dinner here, so it's all right. Mississauga Sausage, because the letter G can be pronounced DJ or DCH, like the penultimate letter in the sausage. So Mississauga. So we have that same G potentially, just reorganize the letters a little bit. Not coincidentally, maybe. The Mississauga rattler is a snake that resembles a string of sausages. At least with a little imagination. If you doubt that English words were used to construct fake native names, consider the name of the Algonquins, who were defeated by the Five Nations. Etymologists struggle, but perhaps not struggled to explain this word, that is. etymologists struggle, but perhaps not coincidentally. Quin is Latin for five, and Algon is Turkish for algae, so we get five algae instead of five nations, because the WCC loves to dehumanize us. I will have to change this word. Obviously, we're not dealing with English this time. We're dealing with Latin and Turkish. And the coincidence here is that the Algonquins were defeated by the five nations, but the word for five, the Latin word for five, is in their name.
Quin, yeah.
Coincidence. Mm-hmm. And I think I did the same when I analyzed ancient Rome and explained, was it the second or third king of ancient Rome? His name had the word quin in it for five. Maybe he was the fifth emperor king. It was another major coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the Bible, Jacob added that his grandson Ephraim. Again, that word Ephah is in there. I am Ephah, I am food, would become a multitude of nations. He said the same for Manasseh. How can one man become a multitude of nations? This hyperbolic wish refers to the real WCC project that bred hundreds of thousands and probably millions of humans and bred them to be distinct ethnic groups like Ham, Shem, and Japheth. This interpretation leads to a radical reinterpretation of how Northern Europe and the Americas were populated. I believe most of North America and Europe were depopulated before the farmed and bred nations arrived and brought with them agriculture, masonry, domesticated horses, iron saws, and plows. This interpretation should also be supported by an analysis of the names of Jacob's two grandchildren, Manasseh and Ephraim. The former name contains the English word man, which can refer to more than one man if it's capitalized. And mass, then the masses, and masseh sounds similar to masses. The latter name contains the English word ram, back to food and animals, and contains the letters needed to spell Efa without its silent second H. And an Efa is a bushel, as I mentioned, of grain or seeds, because the WCC was seeding the continents with their breeds. Just four possible candidates for that title: Caucasian, Arab, Black, and Han. Very, very quite distinct ethnic groups. According to the Bible, only four generations separated Joseph from Moses' birth. And during Moses' lifetime, the tribe of Manasseh already numbered 32,000. If each generation produced an average of 10 children per woman, of which at least five children were women, Manasseh could have 10 children in the first generation. Then his children would have 50, the next generation 250, then 1,250, and by the sixth generation, or I lost track, six, we would have 32,000. So the 32,000 would be accomplished in about seven generations, as I calculated carefully before my stumbling reread. If more intense breeding programs produced 20 children per woman, and if a technique produced a higher ratio of females to males, perhaps four generations would suffice. The Bible never claims that Manasseh populated or formed many nations. In fact, it grants the Jews as a whole only 12 tiny nations in modern-day Israel. But all this is code, and more code for Caucasians, I suspect. In Solomon's time, they were separated into two kingdoms, the Jews were, which I interpret to mean Europe and North America. Actually, only the U.S. and Canada, the two places settled primarily by white Europeans. Not many of us came to Mexico or initially. The U.S. has 50 states. We're going to go off into slightly different territory. Okay, the U.S. has 50 states, but the word state is synonymous with nation state, or simply nation. And if we add Canada, Washington, D.C., and Puerto Rico, the United States has 53 nations. And recently, Trump spoke of buying Greenland, which would make 54. It's a joke. Now, look at the coincidences of numerical coincidences. Wow, yeah. Europe has 51 nations. And if we include dependencies and the Vatican City, if we include them. But 52, if we add the city of London, it's kind of its own.
Yeah, city land. State.
Yeah. And perhaps I'm missing something, like the rumor that Oxford University is secretly sovereign. Astonishingly, Africa has 54 nations. Asia has 48 nations and three territories. And Latin America has 19 countries. But Mexico contains 31 states and one federal district, bringing us to 50 Latin American states. Is that about right? Yeah, 50, 51. Are these numbers for different continents and two linguistic regions coincidentally nearly identical? That seems implausible. Apparently, a number-mad cult is dividing the continents into identical numbers of nations. These number-mad people, perhaps Freemasons or people posing as Freemasons. Yeah. Blacks were reputedly shipped from Africa to the Americas, but what if they were bred just as whites were in European subterranean human farms before being brought by zeppelins, not ships, to the Americas? Is this possible or even plausible? Ancient Indian and Chinese texts report divine beings and heroes flying with chariots or mysterious machines. Besides, why would an imperial power trouble itself abducting resistant natives from one continent to bring them to another if every continent had plenty of natives? You know, this is the transcontinental slavery narrative problem. One defense often offered for the transcontinental slave trade is that Native Americans were simply too difficult to enslave, please. They're not that different from the rest of us. I don't buy it. And this idea that slaves were brought across the Atlantic to be slaves sounds almost as silly as the story that Jews were brought across Europe by the Nazis because they didn't know how to kill them in the countries they found them and had to build concentration camps in Poland.
Yeah, that is a crazy story, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's a similarly crazy.
Yeah, if they really wanted to kill them, why wouldn't they just shoot them?
Yeah. And not only bring them to Poland, but you know, residences were built for them. Not just hovels or barracks. No, actual residences were there. All right.
We don't hear that part.
No. All right. Assuming that the Bible's history of the Jewish diaspora is code for the non-fictional diaspora of Caucasians, Africans, Arabs, somewhat, Asians also, we can now understand why Ezekiel wrote that the Jews were in the nations where they have been carried captive, right? So if underground slaves or people were being bred, they would have been captives before they were brought out of the underground and used to populate mostly the temperate climate zones of the northern hemisphere. And I sent them far away, quote unquote, I sent them far away among the nations and scattered them among the countries. Wow, really? Were there countries and many nations 3,000 years ago? I think I'm still quoting the early part of the Bible. The WCC indeed scattered its human herds, and some of the human cattle were allowed to fill the cities and houses under which they once lived, places once strictly inhabited by the nobility. This is why Ezekiel joked, "I will bring the most wicked of nations to take possession of their houses, the houses of the nobles. I will put an end to the pride of the mighty, and their sanctuaries will be desecrated." Yeah, desecrated by us, I suppose, us lower class beings who, as the Tartarians would also argue, came upon these empty cities. Very mysterious. Cities that were carefully prepared for us, I suspect. The story of Noah's children confirms my interpretation. It claims that Noah had three sons, Japheth, Ham, and Shem. Besides referring to food, these three names are also code names for Africans, Asians, and Europeans. So alternatively, Japheth could refer to the Japanese of Asia, Ham could refer to the people living in hamlets, or to the Han, H-A-N people of China. Shem could refer to Semites or to the people named Mesh, an Arab people who lived throughout North Africa. If we assume that Noah's sons represent one ethnic group, we might not be able to explain how they spread out over the earth, for the earth is not settled by only one ethnic group. All right. That's the first half. No callers or comments?
Yeah, well, do we have any comments? Anyone want to call in and discuss this? Interesting theory. It's sort of fictive to me, but you have a good imagination. I'll give you that.
Right. What solutions are we offering to our modern slavery, right? Yeah, I'd like to get to that too one day. I think the short answer, of course, is to as much as possible abandon the current system, but I'm a back to nature kind of guy. I imagine myself, my future self, or people in the future, disposing of everything we consider civilized and finding ways to be happy and healthy, living very simply. Perhaps.
Do you see that happening? People just love their modern conveniences, I just can't see it myself.
No.
Even in Mexico.
Sure, but no, even here, you're right. And it's just a very small number of people who are willing to do this. But I think things will get so bad in the future, or so much worse, that eventually that the illusion will of everything being fine and progress being certain, those illusions will crack. Things will fall apart, I suspect. I'm not saying it will happen in my lifetime.
I don't think it will. When I watch Jeff Berwick down in Mexico, he keeps talking about leaving the system, but...
Yeah, I know. He doesn't.
He loves the system.
Yeah, he's talked about his garden or his little farm, and I've never seen it. I never seen it. Well, I stopped watching about 3-4 years ago. So. Yeah, well, on the other hand, here in Mexico, there are people who are living in such poverty and in other third world nations that it's not a big stretch to imagine that they would embrace a better way of living in harmony with nature, only with nature. They don't have much besides that as it is. It's just they don't know how to make the most of nature. They're not gardeners. They're not...
Yeah, we're very soft.
Builders, yeah. And you mean we as in the Canadians?
Everyone in the world, I think. The whole Western world is the same.
Yeah, maybe soft, spoiled, and lacking manual labor skills, building skills, survival skills.
Right. Well,
yeah.
I'm sure if push came to shove, people could wake back up and revive those skills, but it's almost like learning how to read and write now that the computers do all that for you. So even that's going away. Those skills, writing skills, thinking skills.
I know. I'm on the...
You must be, as a teacher, you must be encountering that all the time. Getting AI scripts.
From students, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's happened. It's not hard to spot. It's just hard to prove because you can't find a website anymore where it's still posted.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's a very, very different world. So people want a new world. Well, they're making one right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to recognize it in 10, 15 years. It's already changing super quickly.
Yeah, catching up to China and going beyond.
Yeah, well, even beyond China. China's ahead all the time now, but just all the changes and what people are going to do. What are they going to do with the people? I guess they can eat them. Like, that's your theory.
Well, they don't want to eat us. We're too toxic, I think, but I don't know. I was in a gym recently, and this new generation, it's so different.
Yeah.
There were five young people in there in their 20s, maybe. And for the first half hour I was there, they did almost nothing but look at their phones. And
oh my God. Yeah.
It's like, wow. Anyway, I got some fun stuff from my other book, Encyclopedia Comedia.
Okay, we'll close on that. I got 15 more minutes.
Yeah, I might have two little passages to read. Let me have to reshare, I suppose.
Yeah, reshare, because we're looking at your blank screen there.
Yeah, it's a coming. Come on. There we go.
Okay, what do we got here?
We got... Anatomy, spelled anatomy. and you are the best medicine. It's a cannibal joke. Okay, I will now reveal to you the secrets of human anatomy. Thighs are thighs because they are the sides or the side cuts. The ass is the ass because the wild ass is a mammal we sometimes hunt and is very delicious. Buttocks are buttocks because, being the largest muscle group in the human body, they are comparable to the meat of the bull, ox, the largest animals typically slaughtered by us. Hamstrings are hamstrings because we love your hams on tendon strings. Calves are calves because we identify you and your parts with edible farm animals. Breasts, both male and female, are called breasts because each breast, like each chicken breast, is the best part of the beast. We call the fatty parts of the female breast tits, and we call little birds tits because the fat fries away into the air. In North America, the name for tits is chickadees, but young women are also chicks, and chicks also means young chickens. Thus, we and you dehumanize yourselves. Cleavage is cleavage because we cut the underlying sternum with a cleaver. The heart sounds like the word heart, H-A-R-T, which means a young deer. And these words sound the same because both taste very good. Shoulders are shoulders because they are the holders for the hooks in our meat storage cool rooms. The trapezius is the thick muscle between the neck and shoulders. Its name refers to the word trapezoid, which is a geometric shape, and you know we love geometry, especially triangles. But seriously, the word trapezius actually refers to the trapeze, a high swing with two ropes attached to a crossbar. Do you understand? We hang and swing your carcasses from two ropes attached to your trapezius muscles or to the clavicle bar-like bone beneath it. Thus, we trap or ensnare you. The old root of the word clavicle is clau, meaning hook, crook, because we hang your carcasses with ropes attached to hooks around the clavicle bone, which is part of the shoulder holder. Clau or clo also means crooked or forked branched, the crooked or forked branch used as a bar or bolt in primitive structures. The outer shoulder muscle is the deltoid. We named this muscle after the Greek delta letter, whose uppercase is represented by a triangle. And you know what secret society loves triangles. If you want another clue, we are not Greeks, and people sometimes call us the Angles, Angles. The largest back muscle is the latissimus dorsi. The latter word was derived from Latin, word for back, which is dorsal. But dorsi is also an anagram for Doris, which is a Greek name for a sea nymph. And the word nymph is used to name many animals, just as dorsal is used to describe the location of a fish's fin. Yes, we love to associate human body parts with edible animals. The waist is the waist because we don't eat innards, the guts. Therefore, your waist is a waste to us. So we throw them into the gutters, for they are your guts. But we like your kidneys almost as much as we like your kids. And we need your livers to live. And you can guess why we call both your children and your young goats kids. That's right, you are our livestock. We added the affix seps to the names of various large muscle groups because the C could be pronounced as a hard C, so that we have quadriceps for the large leg muscle, group of leg muscles. Kep is the spelling for keep in Northern England and Scotland. This explains why words such as quadriceps. This explains words such as quadriceps, because during butchery, we keep large muscles. The word kep is also very close to the Dutch word kip, meaning chicken. We thank your brothers and sisters for keeping us healthy with their precious bodies. They are your family, but we call them our 1 million Jesuses and sacrificial doctors, their bodies and their blood, of which we need a great amount, for we are not few. They help save us from rapid aging and poor health. They willingly sacrifice their babes to us as a sign of gratitude for the good food, water, and safe shelters we give them underground. Please do not be ashamed or angry. Do not be ashamed. That reminds me of the Order of the Garters motto. You should understand that only healthy people can make sick people healthy, and only young people can make old people feel young again. Perhaps one day you too will donate your blood, meat, glands, hormones, liver, and bones so that the sick and elderly can be healthy and young again. Please don't cry. Slaughter's laughter is the best medicine. So we thank you for making us laugh every day. Life was very boring before the great con game began, when we merely kept our rituals and technologies secret from the greater world. Now, thanks to our deceptions and your foolishness, we can't stop laughing. You really are the most wonderful clowns. Thank you for our health. We are grateful to you. But don't expect us to reward you. We owe you as much as we own you. Anyway, there's a long list of human body parts that facilitate very nice cannibal reading.
Are you the leading cannibal researcher, do you think?
I must be now, yeah. It's my calling.
Does anyone else talk about this kind of stuff?
No.
Draw inspiration from any other? You don't have a picture of Jeffrey Dahmer on your wall?
No, I don't. No.
You think that was a fictive character?
Yeah, probably. It just seems like different kinds of psychopathy are used for a brief time, and then they move on to a new topic, a theme. So we had the psychopathic mass or serial killer period in what was it, the 70s. Especially in the 70s, yeah.
60s, 70s, yeah. 80s, yeah.
Yeah, and we had the rock music is satanic in the 80s, and these things seem to come and go, just like the psyops of this day and age. Like we had the airplanes crashing for a couple of months, and okay, they're taking a break again.
Mm-hmm.
So, this didn't come to me because I was interested in the subject. I've been trying to decode these texts for 20 years, and this just opened up with a small crack when I began questioning the Roman pantheon a few shows ago.
Oh, okay.
And one thing led to another. So, and trying to explain the Tartarian narrative, at least the conventional one, which doesn't make too much sense to me. I think this darker interpretation of what Tartaria was about answers a lot more questions and leaves less mystery than most of the Tartarian researchers leave. Fewer questions. Why all these underground places under cities? I don't think they were hiding from anyone at all.
Who do you think? Who are your favorite Tartarian researchers?
I've been all over the place. I think I shared some things last week what was it called? My Lunch Break. A mutual friend of ours recommended something. And no, I've been here and there. I don't disagree with much except for the rosy picture they paint of the Tartarian world, as if it was some kind of urban paradise that we just missed out on. I have done also some. I had some fun recently working on the. Where is it? The table of elements, if you're interested.
Okay, the periodic table.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, we got about. Can we do it in 5 minutes?
Yeah, I can give an overview. I don't have to go through all the details.
Yeah, go for it.
Like the beginning. Oops. Don't do that to me. The table of the cannibals. All right. If you believe in science, then you believe what you do not see, and you believe instead in what you read, which is mind spell. Why didn't you know that? Look, the word science was always a clue. The fragment psi refers to psi, spelled P-S-Y, as in psyop, which is an abbreviation of psyche, meaning mind, and ens is Spanish for a unit of measurement equal to the average width of a letter. And letters are the basic atomic units of written languages and spell casting. Therefore, the word science already told you that it casts a spell on your mind. If that seems too complicated, obviously the word science is a corruption of sense. And science is as unreal and untrue as a seance. All these puns, near puns. Science has taken us very far away from the senses, and that's not by accident. That is intentional. We're stuck now in computer graphics and books. Well, do you want more evidence? Consider the word atom. It refers to the basic but theoretical, not real, building blocks of all matter, according to science. The word is a clue. Atom comes from Adam, the mythical first father of the human species. But his name was derived from Adam, a Dutch word meaning breath, which is why God brought Adam to life by giving him the breath of life. But a breath is a symbol for nothing. It is something, but it's a symbol for nothing. It is somewhat empty to the senses. To atomic theory, atomic theory, because of the word atomic, is already inscribed with the knowledge that it is nothing, just breath, breathing, talking. Ditto for nuclear physics. It's nothing, but it is an excellent way to prevent you from discovering truth and wisdom. The entire table of elements, or atoms, species of atoms, is a joke and should be renamed the tale of elements or the fable of elements. Why table of elements? First, because elements was derived from aliment, which means food. Sorry, more food. Which belongs on a table, table of aliments. The joke is that the table of elements contains nothing that should be eaten. Elements are not food and do not exist as elements in food. But why spell the word aliment as element, L-E-L or L-E-E-L-E with a silent E, spells one of God's names, and ments means mind. So elements means a God's mind. Just God's mind. Well, God isn't real, and neither is a table of elements. None of its listed elements exist in isolation, uncombined with other things. This is a theme partly a theme explored by doctors challenging virus vitamins theory, right?
Yeah, right. I buy in. Yeah, I agree. You can't take magnesium. That's toxic, I think. It doesn't exist in nature.
Right. Yeah. I don't mind mentioning again that on Substack, Medicine Girl is doing really good work.
Vitamins.
Vitamins, yeah, and elements. I'm going to skip over all the details. It's really fun decoding the words and the numbers associated with those words. A lot of toxic elements are matched to, let's call them toxic numbers, these Masonic Illuminati numbers like 18. This one's not a good example of that, but 13, 11, sodium, maybe for another day. I'm not in agreement with the salt guy.
Oh, she also does the thing, the periodic table is the greatest scientific hoax of our time. Did you get inspiration from that?
I did get started. She hasn't done this word by word decoding, but she is doing really good work about the history and how it's being used to promote vitamins and carbons. He's doing
five posts on carbon. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'll put a link to that. That's good stuff.
Mm-hmm. And I can finish with this, this last paragraph, very fun stuff. Lastly, please note that 79 of the 118 elements end with the affix IUM, which represent the words I am. Thus we have I am beryl. Beryl is a feminine name in beryllium. I am German, germanium. I am American, americanium. I am hafen. This is a German name in hafnium. I am Lawrence. Lawrence is the name mostly in Laurentium. I am Livermore, an English surname in Livermorium. Erbium, Europium, Californium. They don't need explanation.
Yeah, it's all
and the last, the last element is named Organison, which translates or breaks into son of Ohane or son Johann. The J was silent in the past. So this is very close. G can be a soft G or J sound. In other words, we have a table set with humans, Americans, and men named Johann or Ogan, Herb, Lawrence. They're all in the table, on the table of aliments ready to be eaten. I'm starting to sound a little bit like your specialist on trans and trannies.
Yeah. I like that.
So I think that will do today.
All right, Pete. That's good stuff.
For the
year. That's a wrap up of the year. We've been doing this. When did you first come on the show? I'm trying to track it here.
Is it 3 months already?
Yeah. Very interesting stuff. But I hope everyone is enjoying it. And here's Medicine Girl's Substack. I appreciate Peter mentioning that. And I'm going to read it now. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. The carbon, the whole idea of carbon, you know, the idea of carbon dioxide and carbon being toxic to humans is absurd. And then, of course, you have to question the idea, does carbon dioxide itself even exist? And I'm not sure it does. I know you can do chemical tests to prove it, but what are we actually proving? We're proving that a certain element or a certain percentage of air, even that is hard to wrap your head around, that they can separate just air into different elements.
Yeah.
So,
it's the same problem from the virology.
It's very similar. So, but I know that the carbon market is real. I'm not quite sure exactly how it's being implemented right now in Canada, because we got rid of the carbon tax, which was just going to be a global tax on all transactions. And the beauty of that is they were going to control which transactions they they wanted to encourage or discourage by adding this carbon tax to just about anything and everything they didn't like. So, for instance, if they don't like drinking, they can make up a story that drinking alcohol can be traced to extra carbon dioxide released in the air, which warms the planet, which kills the climate, which kills humans. And they can just weave these stories to make people believe that they're doing, they're helping the world, but you're, all you're doing is helping them behave the way they want you to behave.
Yeah. I see Eco Charlie wants to read Slaughterhouse Five. It's come back to my mind too. Books with numbers in their titles are always suspect. And that book does have the cannibal theme implied, as it concerns men trapped in a slaughterhouse.
Is that the fifth edition or the
fifth? That's the actual title, Slaughterhouse
Five. What's the five significance, I want?
It was the name of the actual, the number of the slaughterhouse, I think. In somewhere in Germany, right? So what was the city that was bombed famously? Dresden was being bombed during this story, the setting, and these men survive in a slaughterhouse.
Oh,
how darkly ironic, you know.
Oh, I got it. That's funny. Thank you, Echo Charlie. Thanks, everyone, for joining in. Tomorrow, Fake Nukes Phil will be here. He's got a lot of deconstruction he's done on the Bondi, the Brown. I think the Brown story is over, and the loser of the Brown story is Portugal. Yes, Portugal is being dragged into this because apparently the shooter who shot himself in the head two times with a shotgun in a storage unit in New Hampshire was Portuguese. Yes. Finally, we get Portugal into the PSYOP villain circle. It's their turn to pay attention. Well, maybe he'll talk about that. But boy, I guess that story is over now. Because when there's no villain alive, they can't have a trial. They can't drag it out anymore. So I think that's it for that. But we still have the Bondi scam story in Australia. If anyone here is paying attention, I don't think so. But Pete, have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and talk to you next year. And if anyone wants to make a Christmas value for value exchange, fakeologist.com/donate. We will take your devalued bitcoins, although it'll go back, don't worry. And anything else you want to exchange for value, except the body part. Don't send any of those. Send them to Pete. He'll cook it up. He's not a cannibal, I'm sure. He's a vegan, actually. You're a vegetarian, aren't you?
Even worse, I'm a raw vegan.
Oh, my God. You eat raw meat? No, sorry. It's raw vegetables.
No,
that's a different category. We've got one of our comment trollers is a raw megan or raw meat. What's the word for that? Is that a megan? No. You just eat raw meat?
Not sure.
They don't cook your food?
That's right, yeah. And it wasn't because it was a trend. It was my body. It gave me no choice. Everything else was upsetting me.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you got to do what you got to do to survive. Okay, everybody. Yeah. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a good night, morning, afternoon, good evening, or good morning, whatever time you're listening to this. I appreciate it. And Pete, we'll see you later.
Enjoy.
All right. Take care, everybody.